The Hoop Collective is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. As we move closer to the NBA playoffs, check out The Low Post with Zach Lowe for all your NBA needs. Follow the show wherever you find your podcasts. ESPN Films' latest documentary, 144, executive produced by Chinne Agumake, takes viewers inside the WNBA's unprecedented 2020 season, 4 months after the WNBA postponed its season due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The league set out to play a condensed season entirely in a bubble, where 144 players across 12 teams not only came together to play basketball, but also to dedicate their season to social justice. 144 will premiere May 13th at 9 p.m. on ESPN, and the film will be available on ESPN Plus immediately after its premiere. Welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Monday afternoon. And this is our third annual, believe it or not, 3 years. We started with the 2018 draft. For the third time, we are having our annual redraft. And my redraft compadres joining me from Los Angeles, California, one of our draft experts, one of the best guys in the business, is Mike Schmitz. Hey, Mike.
Brian, thanks for having me, man.
Welcome back to Redraft Year 3. And your opponent, I said opponent, because this is not friendly. We used to be friendly on this podcast, but those days are gone. From Seattle, who's an expert on all things NBA, the machine, Kevin Pelton.
If it's a competition, I don't like my chances because I think Mike's board is going to hew a lot closer to conventional wisdom.
Well, Pelton, I actually owe you an apology because when I went back and looked at the last two of these, I gave Schmitz the honorary first pick both years.
Wow.
So when we start here in a second, you are going to have the first pick in this draft with apologies that you did not get the first pick last year. Too much respect was given to Schmitz. That won't happen again. The respect quotient has been corrected. So what we're going to do here is we're going to look back at the 2020 draft, which didn't happen that long ago. It feels like, Schmitz, it happened in, was it, what day was it in November?
I don't even October? Know. Couldn't even tell you.
Yeah.
late November. Late November.
It was in November.
Yeah. It was all a blur.
And you got another one coming up pretty quick here. It feels like it's all happening pretty fast. So we're gonna start with the 60th pick. That's the Pelicans. We traded the Bucks. Go ahead, Kevin Pelton. No, just kidding. Just kidding. We're gonna do the lottery and we're gonna go back and forth. Pelton's gonna take the first pick and they're gonna redraft the players, knowing what we know now. Wouldn't the world be a lot different if we could all do it this way? But that would make it less fun. So we're going to start with the Wolves in just a second, but Schmitz, I wanted to ask you, you recently just got back from a scouting trip through Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I believe during just after the draft in December, I believe you went to Africa. So you've done a lot of travel during this pandemic. Just as a quick aside here, just because I'm frankly interested, I know the listeners may not care, but I personally care. What was it like to travel through Europe and to go to basketball games in this particular moment in our history?
Yeah, there were certainly no shortage of challenges. But it was great to be back in the gym evaluating guys. I was at this like under 19 Serbian league game watching some 15-year-old kid who will probably never play in the NBA. And it was the happiest I had been in quite some time. So I felt like a kid in a candy store, kind of got my identity back. But, you know, to get around, it wasn't always easy. I spent, I think, about 12 hours at the Lithuanian border. So that's maybe a story for a dinner. But it was.
Oh, I was hoping for the story right now.
I mean,
unless it involved like some sort of illegal payoff.
No illegal payoff. Basically, each country had different regulations to get in. And so for some, it's, you know, you need a PCR test and a letter from your employer and, you know, a letter from the club you're going to see and maybe the agency of the player. And some of them, you know, require a letter of clearance all the way up to the Minister of Sport. And so it was, you were always on your toes, not exactly sure, you know, what they would ask for at every stop. So I, you know, waited patiently at the Lithuanian border until I got that clearance. And then I got it at around midnight and boom, I was in. So
please describe how you were waiting at the Lithuanian border. Were you in a car? Were you in a holding cell?
I was not in a car. I wish I was in a car. I was in a nice little room near all of the employees of the airport. You know, I had my own little bed that I sat at patiently. I had Wi-Fi, which was great.
Oh.
You know, if I was hungry, it's just one knock on the door. Hey, would you escort me out to?
So you were definitely in a cell.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, a little bit. Mm-hmm. So that's the short version, but the people were great. You know, I got that clearance. Eventually I was able to come in and watch a game, do some interviews, check out a few workouts. So each place, like I said, was different. I mean, I went to Istanbul, which was much easier to get into, Serbia, much easier to get into. But ultimately, I was just really grateful that, you know, not only I made it back in one piece, but I was able to see these kids and evaluate them because, I mean, I think they've been hit probably the hardest out of anyone from this pandemic. You know, there's no one at games. Most international scouts aren't even traveling. Some not even going to games in their home market, you know, so games are getting canceled left and right. I mean, that was a big challenge as well. You know, you could wake up one day and the player you're going to see has COVID, or you could wake up and the game has been canceled because there was a COVID outbreak. So it was definitely kept me on my toes. And I think some American scouts and executives are now kind of planning their trips over there. I've gotten some texts and some calls of people asking, hey, what were the logistics like? So, you know, I was really grateful. I had a lot of good people looking out for me and helping me get from point A to point B. So it was exciting, to say the least.
All right. So before we, that's good. I appreciate that. Before we start this redraft, should my wife sometimes tells me that I drone on when I tell stories and we're supposed to be talking about the NBA. So let's have a vote here. And Tony, our producer, can vote as well. Should I tell the story about the time Stephen A. and I were detained at the Canadian border? Should I tell that story or should I just move on to the redraft? Kevin,
I'm voting yes.
Yeah, I would love to hear that.
Okay. Well, even if you voted no, Tony, you're outvoted 2-1. During one of the conference finals that the Raptors played the Cavs, to get between Toronto and Cleveland was a challenge. There was only like one nonstop flight a day, and it was on a propeller plane with like 30 seats, and there wasn't a lot of flights. So ESPN rented us a bus. I asked about renting a plane. You know, if it was the NFL guys, you know, if it was Schefter and you know Greenberg and those guys, we would have had a plane. But okay, we got a bus. So it was a bus that transported us, everybody who was covering these conference finals from Cleveland to Toronto. We get to the Canadian border in Buffalo. We are on the Canadian side. And they did not like what we were doing. And they cleared us out of the bus and took us to lock up while they searched the bus from top to bottom. And Stephen A was on the bus with us. And I think Stephen A. might have had like an interview or a travel plan or a dinner plans or something. And he's pacing back and forth in this cell. And we were in there, you know, it wasn't like 12 hours like Schmitz, but we were in there for a while. And here's the thing, like ESPN, like there's some shows are on our Canadian partner, TSN, but not every show. I don't know if First Take is on there, but in Canada, you don't get recognized the same. And these Canadian guys they didn't give a flying bleep about us. And so while they're searching it, you know, Stephen A. is starting to get a little antsy. And I knew we were in trouble because they took all of our passports. And when the guy came out, he called and he didn't say Stephen Smith or Stephen A. Smith. He said, Steve Smith. And I was like, oh no, this guy calls him Steve Smith. We got no chance of getting preferable treatment. But luckily, no contraband was found. If any contraband was found, it wasn't serious enough to keep us there. And the Canadians, despite being well behind in the series, let the American journalists go through. But Stephen A., in the, you know, can you imagine? You guys can just go wild with some of the stuff that was going on in there. All right. Redraft time. We'll be interested to see if Tony cuts that story. redraft time. So we will start with the Minnesota Timberwolves being on the clock with Kevin Pelton. As you know, they selected Anthony Edwards in the real draft. Now in our redraft, Mr. Pelton, what say you?
As well as Anthony Edwards has played as exciting as his performance has been over the last few months here, and the Timberwolves as a whole, all of a sudden looking pretty frisky, where I'm not quite as embarrassed about the bet I made with Tim Bontemps at last year's trade deadline about whether they would have a top 10 pick this year that they would potentially send to the Warriors. Still, I think you have to go
with
LaMelo
Ball. What was the bet? Remind me.
It was dinner on where their draft pick fell. I'm not exactly certain the conditions, but I said that it would be outside the top 10. He said it would be in the top 10.
I don't think you're going to win.
I obviously have given up on that one. So if we ever allowed to do dinners again, I owe Tim one. But
I will say Bontemps' shoulders are a little back and head is high right now because he predicted when LeBron got hurt that the Lakers would, you know, might be in the play-in tournament. So we'll see.
I mean, is there ever a time when that's not true about Bontemps? But as for LaMelo Ball, I mean, I think he's got to be the pick here based on what we've seen from him as a rookie. We knew from a skill standpoint, his passing, his playmaking at his size was going to translate to the NBA and make him a valuable player. He was number one on the draft board for both Mike and I going into the draft, even though he ended up getting taken third overall. And then the shooting is, we've talked about in this podcast, you know, you've mentioned it was a concern for you, Brian, and I was more optimistic that it would come around eventually, but I didn't anticipate it was going to be this quick. I figured he would be a really ineffective player as a rookie before eventually developing into a quality point guard. But, you know, pretty close to day one, at least like the first month of the season, he's been a valuable player. We've seen just in the couple of days since he's been back from the wrist injury, the kind of plays that he's making, the full court underhand pass that Mike highlighted on Twitter the other day. He's a future star. I mean, I think he's one of the brightest prospects in the NBA right now. So again, as well as Edwards has played, and despite the fact that you've got D'Angelo Russell there, you can't worry about that. You'd have to take the best prospect. And right now that's LaMelo.
I'm not surprised because a couple of weeks ago when we had you on to talk about your future player rankings, you know, you had him pretty high on your list.
Right? Yeah, I think Stephen A had some thoughts on that one.
Oh, yes, that is true. He wasn't sure if it was our ranking or not, but he didn't like it. He was not quite as loud at the Canadian border. Schmitz, Jonathan Givony was as vehement as I can remember about the future, how high he was in the future of LaMelo. You were pretty high on LaMelo too. You got, you know, before they make your second pick here, I feel like you were pretty vindicated so far on that selection.
Yeah, he's been even better than I anticipated, and I was a huge fan. I thought he was the clear-cut number one pick. But I mean, when you look at guys to average 15, 5, and 5 before age 20, I think the only other two are Luka and LeBron. And so I kind of second, you know, KP's sentiment here. I think he has as much upside, you know, as any young player in the NBA not named Luka or Zion, honestly. And because I just think physically he's going to continue to get better, you know, finishing around the rim, the skill level is already ridiculous. He just has so many qualities that you can't teach. So have to feel good about LaMelo if you're Charlotte.
So, and as to go back to draft night, the Wolves were very interested in trading out of this pick. They were trying up until they were on the clock, from what I have been told, to get the Warriors interested in moving up. The Warriors have their draft pick this year and next year, depending on where it falls. I think they wanted it back, quite frankly. And they were saber-rattling, according to the stories, that they were going to take James Wiseman. The Warriors were really locked in on James Wiseman. I think the Hornets, who drafted third, really liked James Wiseman. James Wiseman was a big thing here. LaMelo Ball wasn't really ever considered number one, even though he was the top of a lot of guys' draft boards. So number two, where James Wiseman went to the Warriors, on the clock now, Mike Schmitz.
I'm going to take Anthony Edwards. I think you could argue Halliburton, maybe a better fit just with the way that you know, Golden State likes to play. But I thought it was a pretty clear 1-2 in the draft with LaMelo Ball at number one and Anthony Edwards at number two. You know, we've talked, KP and I and other colleagues, just about some of the areas Edwards clearly needs to improve. I mean, the efficiency, of course, and the defensive intensity. But talent-wise, I think this kid can lead the NBA in scoring someday. Like, I really, really do. Just with that body, that explosiveness. I mean, every move he makes is an NBA caliber move that you see from, you know, all-stars, whether it's the step back going left, his hesitation. He's so shifty. And, you know, I think Steph and Draymond, they could use another guy who could, you know, create offense from the perimeter.
Man, like Edwards. Can you imagine? I mean, I have been very loud that I am high on Wiseman's talent. I really think, you know, it's hard to find a guy of his size with his skills, and he's just has barely played for a couple of years, and so, you know, he looked like a fawn out there at times, especially on defense. But when you think about what LaMelo or Edwards could be on that Warriors team, especially you look at, I mean, frankly, let's just be honest. Steph has played better without Wiseman out there, and this explosion may have happened anyway, but this explosion happened after Wiseman got hurt. Not that Wiseman was playing 38 minutes a night, but it'll be interesting to see how that goes forward. By the way, Anthony Edwards already on the NBA's all interview team. love his attitude. You know, as he potentially becomes a star, he and Cole Anthony, two tremendous additions, and also Tyrese Halliburton, another great interview. So great rookie interview class, and LaMelo is not too far behind. Great interview class. Okay, so third pick, Hornets, Kevin Pelton.
Yeah, to me, there's pretty clearly a top three in this draft when you look at Halliburton, Edwards, and Ball. So even though, you know, I don't know if Halliburton is necessarily the biggest need for the Hornets because they do have Devontae Graham and Terry Rozier in the backcourt. Even if we take LaMelo Ball off their roster, I still think you have to take him. And I have him number two on my board ahead of Edwards. I'm getting my top two because of the way this draft fell. I think it's an interesting question because it's easy to see how Edwards can be a star. The potential, as Mike mentioned, for him to lead the league in scoring. We know what that player looks like. And one of the challenges with Halliburton is I think it's more difficult to see, you know, kind of a guy with his broad skill set. What does a star version of that look like? And, you know, I've been thinking maybe Drew Holiday, but a little more offensive than Drew Holiday, whereas more of his value is defensive. Those are some of the questions I've been having. And I think that made it difficult for scouts to see how good he was going to be. But, you know, the idea that there was a ceiling on how good he can be offensively, he's already obliterated that. I think he's already better on offense as a pick and roll playmaker and a shooter than people expected he might ever get to at this point. And it's really fascinating. If you look at the games he's started where De'Aaron Fox has been out of the lineup, so he's been the starting point guard. If we take out Sunday night's game that he left early with an injury with the Kings already well on their way to that win over the Mavericks, continuing their domination over Dallas this season. In the five starts before that at point guard, Halliburton has averaged 17.6 points, 8.6 assists. And for a rookie point guard, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I talked to him a couple of weeks ago, and I was joking about how I think that there could be a 30 for 30 done on his draft night at some point. because, you know, Mike, I heard him as – He has said he thought there was a possibility of him going as high as number two. Was there a reason that you know of about why you think he dropped all the way to 12 based on what happened there?
I think there's you know, a few different things at play. I mean, I think, you know, his group probably didn't want him in a couple of spots, right? You know, you try to manage, you know, whether it's the medical or, you know, the physical and all that, and try to steer your player to the right spot. But, you know, the more people you talk to around the league, I mean, there were a handful of teams that just straight up passed on him. You know, I've heard stories of some teams in particular saying, sorry, like we prefer Kyra Lewis. You know, nothing against Kyra Lewis. He's an exciting young player. But I think it was a mixture of a couple of different things at play. One, like trying to make sure he lands in the right spot that, you know, they were comfortable with, where they feel it would be a great fit. Because I think for Tyrese in particular, that's really important. You know, I think aside, you know, even with Kevin's stats of him being the sole ball handler in the backcourt, you know, he's always seen as being best with another guy who can create next to him. And I think that fit with Fox has been great. So I think it was partially that. And then a lot of teams just didn't really buy it. You know, I think they wondered, like, does he have that kind of breakdown ability off the bounce? Can he be like your number one shot creator on a really good team? And, you know, when I first saw him as a freshman, I had those questions. Here was this kid who dribbled the ball like five times per game, had this funky shot, but his efficiency was off the charts.
He gets it off kind of slow and low, but he does it.
And then
I mean, he's already top five in my projections at that point. He's a freshman.
Yeah, and there was a lot of battles in front offices between, you know, the analytics and kind of your old school style scouts who were kind of rejected the notion that he would end up being this type of player. And it was really wasn't until I saw him with the USA U19 team in Crete, when he was with Cade Cunningham and Evan Mobley and Jalen Green and a bunch of studs. And it didn't take long to realize, like, oh my God, if you put talent around this kid in the open court and pick and roll, like, he's going to be, you know, he could potentially be a star. And that's what we're seeing right now.
As we record this podcast, we haven't heard an official injury report on his knee that he suffered on Sunday. Hopefully he's okay. By the way, I looked it up, Pelton. In the game since De'Aaron Fox went out with his latest injury, he was averaging 21 points and 9 assists going into Sunday's game. So I will say about Haliburton, and I don't disagree with this pick there, he does rank, I believe, if it's not dead last, it's in the bottom three in defensive RPM. And he's not exactly getting a good example being set by the rest of the Kings, who are the worst defense in NBA history by that measure. So he does need to improve on that end. Okay. So that figures he was the biggest mover. He had gone 12th to the Kings, moves up to third in our redraft. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. The Chicago Bulls went fourth in the draft. Schmitz. They took Patrick Williams, he was rising on draft boards at the time. This was still a surprise. The Bulls had done a very good job of keeping information from getting out. Nobody was really sure what they were going to do, if I remember correctly. And people thought that Haliburton might actually go here at number four. So in this redraft, where are you at?
Yeah, I'm going to stick with Patrick Williams, to be honest. And, you know, this is probably the part of the draft where Kevin and I, you know, start to disagree a little bit, just because, you know, I generally lean more on kind of my pre-draft evaluations. And so much of that is just because the nature of my job, right? I'm watching these kids since they're 15, 16, 17, and that's kind of the bulk of my data. But with Patrick, you know, at the time, I probably would have said, you know, I would have taken Denny Avdija. You know, maybe a couple other guys I would have taken as well. You know, but I really like how he projects long term. I mean, when you look at, you know, 6'8", 225 pounds, 230, that type of length, and the fact that he's shooting, you know, 38% from three so far. I mean, that was one of the bigger questions.
39, yeah.
Is this guy going to be able to shoot it well enough? It's a little bit slow, but I mean, I think he's like 62%. Percent on corner threes, you know, when you talk about just his ability to space the floor from there and then handle the ball. He shoots a lot of mid-range jumpers, but I kind of like how they're letting him develop, like own those mid-range spots, make corner threes, and then give us effort, you know, defensively. I'm not sure he's been the defender everyone hoped right away. You know, he can improve in a handful of areas, but when you look at those big wings, whether it's a Jaylen Brown or a Kawhi or anywhere down the spectrum, they're obviously hard to find. And, you know, one last point on him, he's younger than Jalen Suggs, Evan Mobley, and Scotty Barnes. So just to kind of speak to the fact that he's just kind of scratching the surface right now, and I think there's a lot to like about him long term.
All right. Well, yeah, I mean, I have, you know, rookies, especially rookies who play the perimeter, historically tend to struggle shooting the ball. All of the things that happen in the NBA, the speed of the game, it tends to show up in their shooting. The fact that he is shooting 48% overall and 39% on threes, at least to this point, does bode well. Plus, he's gotten a lot of experience. He's started 63 games to this point and played a lot of minutes, even though the Bulls have been disappointing in the second half. Okay, Pelton, you are up next with the fifth pick, which was the Cavs. They drafted Isaac Okoro on draft night. You are up now.
Yeah, I'm not going to go with Isaac Okoro, who, you know, has, similar to Williams, been in a pretty small role offensively this season. I think also probably has not made, you know, as much defensive impact right away as you would have hoped in a challenging situation to do that in Cleveland without a lot of great defensive talent around him. But, you know, I think his upside is maybe a little lower than I think we hoped going into the draft based on the fact that he's been playing such a small role on offense. Now, Mike may disagree with me on that, but the guy I'm going to go with here is a more polished player who has been effective from day one and looks like he's going to be a quality role player in the league for, you know, probably a decade, if not more. And that's Sadiq Bey out of Villanova, who actually went 19th in this draft to Detroit, but
big move.
Yeah, big move. He has enough size. He's played both wing spots at 6'7", you know, strong physical 6'7", shooting 38% from three and on huge volume, over six attempts per game. I mean, I think he's got a very good chance at making the all-rookie first team based on his performance. Again, a little older at 20, you know, just turned 22, but I think he's just a rock-solid role player that is going to help you for a long period of time.
Yeah, the Pistons got dragged for a lot of their moves in the offseason. They made a lot of them, a lot of different maneuvers. They made two that look pretty good. The signing of Jeremy Grant, that looks like a pretty good signing. And this move, which they moved around a lot of draft picks, but ended up doing a three-way trade here with Brooklyn and the Clippers, ended up getting Brooklyn's pick. With 19 and made this move. The guy they drafted with their lottery pick, Killian Hayes, I'll be interested to see if we even call his name.
Well, we will definitely have another Piston going here before too long.
Okay. All right. Okay. So number six, the Hawks on draft night drafted Onyeka Okongwu, who I really liked. I mean, I do like literally 1/1000th of what you guys do. I don't watch much college basketball, but when I researched guys, I really liked him. I knew that he had a foot issue. The foot injury was known by some teams, even though it wasn't really super public. And the foot issue ended up keeping him out a bunch of this season. So that was the Hawks. But Schmitz, what say you with the number six pick?
Yeah, I'm drafting Danny Avdia. You know, he had an up and down rookie season to say the least. And then, you know, had the injury, but I was really bullish on his long-term potential. You know, leading up to draft night, on draft night, I thought he, you know, had a chance to be the steal of the draft, you know, going nine to Washington. And, you know, he's someone I've been following since he was 15, 16 years old. So I've been able to see him kind of in different roles, you know, throughout his career internationally, and see him playing with the ball in his hand and being a little bit more of a playmaker. And so I think there was an adjustment for him, you know, this year so far, playing alongside, you know, Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal and even a guy like Rui, guys who are, you know, really good scorers with the ball in their hands. And so he was kind of in this off ball, stand in the corner, be a cutter, be an offensive rebounder type of role. And, you know, that's usually what it's like for guys drafted outside the top three or five as rookies in the NBA. But I think we were starting to see him adjust a little bit. And I really like his versatility. You know, when you talk about a guy who's 6'9", 6'10", who's improved as a shooter, can handle the ball a little bit, can push and transition. I think he has some potential defensively. So if you put him, you know, alongside Trae Young, Clint Capella in that group, you know, I think he gives them kind of a versatile piece, you know, that they could really use.
So Avdija moves from 9 to 6 in the redraft. Pelton, why do you feel about that?
I would have him a little lower. It's kind of similar to Williams and Okoro. There's this group of rookie wings who have played a lot, but haven't necessarily had the ball in their hands a lot. So there's still some question marks about what they're going to be. Atlanta was a team I struggled with as I was prepping for this redraft, since I didn't know which set of teams I was going to have. You know,
I'm sorry. I didn't alert you.
No, that's fine. I mean, it's good to go through the process with everybody, because, you know, we looked at their need coming into the draft is on the wing, but with the addition of Bogdan Bogdanovic and with the development of DeAndre Hunter, that no longer looks like as big of a need for them. I mean, you definitely can always benefit from having more guys there, but you've got Herter, you've got Cam Reddish. There's a lot of options. So I might have gone for a center at this spot, looked at that Wiseman, Okongwu, Isaiah Stewart group. But this was a tough spot for me to figure out exactly which direction to go.
Well, you are up now with the Pistons at 7. As I mentioned, they took Hayes, who's been bothered by injury for most of the year. We talked about Sadiq Bey. You mentioned another Piston. You just mentioned Isaiah Stewart, who also the Pistons also drafted. Where do the Pistons go here at number 7 in your draft?
I would give those guys some consideration, but I think the player is another big mover in this draft, and that's Emmanuel Quickley, who is someone who I wasn't particularly high on coming out of Kentucky. And there was a lot of discussion last fall during the bubble with Tyler Hero playing as well as he was, and Jamal Murray and Devin Booker in the 8 seeding games prior to the playoffs, about these Kentucky guards that tend to come into the league and perform better than you would have realized based on their college production, because of the fact that they're put more in a box at Kentucky and don't necessarily have the spacing around them. And so all of that talk kind of centered on Tyrese Maxey, who has had some good moments this season as a rookie for the Sixers, but I don't know if he's going to go in this redraft of the lottery. And instead, it seems like the guy who's actually benefited is Quickley, who has been incredibly dynamic for the Knicks as a rookie. And you know, I wrote about this when we did our rookie potential rankings on ESPN Plus last week, or a couple weeks ago. I think a lesson I'm taking this season is, with the success of Quickley, with the success of Terry Rozier, if you get a guy who is super quick and can shoot, even if there are some questions maybe about his decision-making as a ball handler, they're going to figure it out in the NBA, because those two skills in combination are so valuable.
So, you know, oftentimes at trade deadlines or in the offseason, whenever we see trades, executives throw this around all the time, and it's not necessarily an ironclad thing, but they talk about, oh, they were offering a bad first or a low first, and talking, you know, a sort of a pick in the 20s. You know, the success rate of picks in the 20s isn't that great. And sometimes when you see teams trade picks that are top 20 protected, they'll refer to those as bad firsts or whatever. And I understand that. But this is an example of why every pick matters. You know, this was, you know, the Knicks moved around. They actually moved back to 25 to get this pick, but this is essentially the pick that one of the returns from the Porzingis trade. This essentially came from the fruit of the Porzingis trade of the Mavericks pick. And we just mentioned, you know, the Pistons didn't exactly slam the ball out of their park with their lottery pick, but did very well outside the lottery in the draft. The Knicks, I think we'll find out here, didn't exactly, at least to this point, slam the ball out of the park with their lottery pick. But because that extra draft pick and good scouting and a good pick in the 20s with Quickley, who went 25th originally, it changes. You know, all of these things matter in the end. And, you know, Quickley isn't a franchise-changing player, but he's a nice piece to have and a piece to go forward on. out of Kentucky. And of course they hired one of the assistant coaches at Kentucky to be their assistant coach, which probably affected them taking this pick. Okay, so I just mentioned the Knicks. Schmitz, they drafted eighth. They drafted Obi Toppin. Let's see where you go here with the eighth pick.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Isaac Okoro. You know, like I said before, I kind of lean pretty heavily on my pre-draft rankings, and this is a kid I've been really, really high on. You know, all the way back to his Hoop Summit days when he came in as just kind of a defender. I don't know. You remember that dunk he had in one of those practices, Kevin? Were you there in Portland?
I probably was, but I forgot.
I think it was our good friend Kyler Kelly. He put on a poster, maybe your guy up in playing in Oregon State. But yeah, I love his tenacity. You know, the defensive versatility that he brought at Auburn. He's been a winner pretty much at every level. And you know, when you look at the way Tibbs likes to coach, defensive oriented guy. When you talk about RJ Barrett and Julius Randle and guys who are, you know, good with the ball in their hands, I think Okoro is someone who could slide in and kind of do all those little things. And the comp for him, you know, we always knew he wasn't going to be like a box score guy early on in his career. He never really was that. He was more a guy coaches love because of his toughness. He's extremely durable. I mean, right now, you know, he's one of only, I think, five or six guys playing 30 minutes or more, you know, at age 20. I think RJ Barrett's one, Zion, Anthony Edwards, and a few others on losing teams. But, you know, I'm going to bet on him continuing to improve. He's someone that, you know, teams loved, his work ethic, his focus. He always made a jump in a different area of his game each year. And so not to say he's going to be the next Jimmy Butler. Obviously, that was a really, really rare you know, kind of development story for Jimmy. But when you look at his rookie year, I mean, he shot 18% from three. So I think, you know, Okoro is going to continue to improve. And I think Tibbs would really like a guy with that mentality.
Yeah, Okoro obviously has shown really good competitive juices at times this year. His shooting has been poor, 28% on three. His challenge with Cleveland is that, you know, they've really ended up needing him to be a small forward. And he's just struggled to defend small forwards at times because he's listed at 6'5". They were, you know, their situation with their perimeter got a little compounded when Kevin Porter Jr. ended up washing out there, which is a whole nother story for a whole nother day. And it made it even more important that Okoro play minutes at a small forward, even though, you know, Porter was pushing it. He's 6'4". So, you know, the Cavs have two small guards as their primary sort of core of their young team in Garland and Colin Sexton, which really means you need some size at that third perimeter position, and Okoro isn't a perfect fit for that. So his upside may be affected by who he ends up playing alongside, but we'll see. The Cavs should get another high pick this year, and if they draft another perimeter player, there could be a move in the offing that could change his situation would be my forecast there. Okay, ninth, Pelton Avdija, Denny Avdija went ninth to them, unfortunately out for the season with an injury. But where would you have the Wizards go in our redraft?
Yeah, I think there's a couple directions they could go. There was a lot of talk on draft night that they were excited about Onyeka Okongwu if he had made it down there. And center, even with Daniel Gafford's emergence for them the last few weeks here, I think potentially a long-term need, another rim protector. So Isaiah Stewart would be of consideration here, James Wiseman in consideration.
Oh, Wiseman hasn't gone yet. My God.
He guys. Is not. No. His name hasn't been mentioned in a
guys.
Minute.
All right, go ahead.
But I'm instead heading back to the wing as they actually went and taking Devin Vassell, who went two picks later to the Spurs. I think you look at him and say, well, he's averaging 5 points per game. Like, you know, has he actually done anything as a rookie? But he's playing sparing minutes on a team that was really deep on the wing, hitting 37.5% of his threes. And they've actually trusted him to start now the last three games since Derek White went presumably out for the season with an ankle sprain. So that's a lot of faith from Greg Popovich, given the number of options he has there. And I think he's right on track to be that next to Danny Green as a 3-and-D wing player in San Antonio.
Well, he's been up and down this year. I think he was one of the guys who had COVID. He had to battle COVID. I think I'm right. If I'm wrong, I apologize. I'm pretty sure he did though. You know, there have been times, it was just a few weeks ago, Popovich didn't play him, and the media in San Antonio said, hey, you didn't play your lottery pick rookie, you know, this their second lottery pick in 20 years or whatever, 25 years, whatever it is. And he was like, yeah, we played a bunch of guys, and he wasn't one of them. That was Popovich's analysis. I talked to a couple of executives and scouts about him. And they just said, look, sometimes in with Popovich, it takes 2 years. So, Schmitz, do you like Vassell? I mean, he's getting a chance now, as Pelton said, and we'll get postseason reps, I would assume.
Yeah, I like him. You know, I clearly like some of those other kind of wing 3-and-D style guys, you know, with just taking Okoro and Avdija and Patrick Williams ahead of him. But, you know, I think once he continues to fill out physically, I always saw him as, you know, maybe could be in that Mikal Bridges mold of like, you know, you're chasing around point guards and making open threes, maybe not doing a ton off the dribble or creating all that much. But I always saw that as kind of, you know, his best case. You know, I wasn't sure his shot was going to translate this quickly the way it has. You know, he always had that kind of cocked back release. So you wondered how that translates to the NBA line. But, you know, I do like him long term and clearly fills, you know, a position of need in the NBA.
All right, well, he jumps up two spots in our redraft. Spurs took him 11th, now 10th. Suns have been terrific with their moves the last couple of years. This one, not so sure about. They took Jalen Smith here. Schmitz, you have the 10th pick.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Isaiah Stewart here at 10. Obviously, they have, you know, DeAndre Ayton, and but I'm really going best player available, and Isaiah Stewart has been unbelievable this year when you look at just the motor, you know, that he plays with. And we could talk about, you know, James Wiseman being maybe the most tantalizing talent or a Kong Wu. And, you know, I'm sure we'll get into Wiseman, but I just love the tenacity that Stewart plays with. I mean, he's a bull in a china shop on the offensive glass. He's incredibly physical. He's, you know, Zach wrote about it, I believe, last week. You know, he's been better stepping out and switching ball screens as well. You know, he's shown that he's probably going to be able to shoot threes. So when I look at, you know, he's kind of leapfrogged Okongwu, who I had ahead of him pre-draft, and Wiseman, who I had ahead of him pre-draft. We had him ranked, I believe, in the top 10 at one point before his freshman season at Washington, where they really struggled, you know, as a team. And a big reason for that is because every time he played against James Wiseman, he frankly kicked his ass, you know, like just he was more physical. And he was better defensively. He was just had a higher motor. And that's clearly, you know, led to a lot of success early in his NBA career. And I think he would be an awesome backup center, you know, for a team like Phoenix hoping to make a deep run.
That's fair. Great nickname too. Great nickname. Beef Stew. It's just a great nickname. Yeah, he's definitely shot up the boards. He's a little undersized, but you know, in the NBA, you know, you can play center at 6'8" these days if you can move around, and he certainly can, as we're seeing. Okay, so guys, I would have if this was a real draft, I would have been calling to trade some of these picks to get Wiseman. But okay.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Spurs drafted Vassell on draft night at the 11th pick. Pelton, you're up at number 11.
Yeah, I didn't expect I was going to be the one to take James Wiseman in this mock draft. But I think at some point you get to the position where the upside outweighs, you know, the more sure things that are elsewhere out there. I mean, it's been a disappointing rookie season for Wiseman. You knew that he was likely to struggle to get up to speed in terms of how little high-level basketball he'd played and how little in the past year and a half. I think the fact that he's probably has perhaps not been as physically dominant as, say, DeAndre Ayton was a couple years ago is a little bit of a concern for me. You know, they're similarly effective around the rim, but Wiseman has more of a tendency, I think, to, you know, prefer the face-up jumper. The fact that he knocked down a couple threes in the season opener in Brooklyn maybe kind of worked to his detriment long-term in terms of convincing him that should be a big part of his game. But, you know, if you get outside the top 10 and you're putting him in that San Antonio development system for a team that does have Jakob Poeltl as a young option in the middle, but, you know, probably has more need for a front court player than they do on the wing with the number of guys there and on the perimeter, I think that at this point it's a reasonable gamble to take.
There were executives who've been in the league a long time. I'm not saying that they are great, you know, at that part of their job, but there are some executives that I know that ranked Wiseman number one in this draft. And I know the league is in a different place than it was before. And come to think of it, those guys who told me that they had him up in the draft are older guys, but we won't do a redraft, but I'll be interested to see where he is a year from now, especially because the Warriors are going to potentially be such a different looking team with potentially two high draft picks coming up. But I'll buy on James Wiseman's future. I could end up being wrong on this one. Obviously, I've been wrong before. I'll be wrong again. All right, 12th, the Kings jumped all over Tyrese Halliburton. Stories came out that night that he had tried to maneuver his way to the Kings on draft night. Again, this would be part of the 30 for 30. I've never heard of anybody try and maneuver their way to the Kings, but that was allegedly the story. He's worked out great there. Unfortunately, in our draft, Schmitz, he's long gone. He's already gotten he's shaken the commissioner's hand. He didn't actually do that, you know, and virtually he's already done his interview with Malika Andrews. He's done his teleconference with the local media, and he's off into his basement to celebrate in the virtual draft. So now with the Kings, what do you do here?
I'm going to take Onyeka Okongwu. He's the guy that, you know, I thought was the best big in the draft prior to draft night, and, you know, has had his struggles this year. I think some of that is injury related, just, you know, not having a full off season as well. But, you know, he's looked a little bit undersized on the court. And I think, you know, he probably hasn't been as impactful defensively as I had hoped. But, you know, I love his defensive instincts. I love his ability to step out on the perimeter and switch ball screens. I mean, he has great hands. He has great touch. And oftentimes just from doing this, you know, for years, is these guys who don't have that elite physical profile, like it takes them a couple years in the NBA to kind of figure things out. Whereas, you know, James Wiseman, like he's so physically gifted in, you know, the way he runs and jumps and moves. And with that length, he came out of the gates like, oh my God, this guy looks like a Hall of Famer, right? And then generally the league figures you out and they start to adjust a little bit. And I think that's kind of, you know, what we saw with him. Whereas Okongwu, I think it's going to be a little bit more of a slow burn, you know, taking him some time to just figure out the level of physicality in the NBA. Okay, the size, how do I finish around a guy like Rudy Gobert? How do I guard a guy like Joel Embiid? But, you know, I really like the things he brings to the table on both ends of the floor. And, you know, I think if you're the Kings, you could obviously use a guy like that who's shown us that he has the ability, you know, to be a rim protector and a switch defender.
Yeah, that's what I liked about him, his ability to switch. Okay, so 13th pick, Pelton went to the Pelicans. They drafted Kyra Lewis, who just has struggled at times getting playing time. The front office in New Orleans has actually tried to trade out some of the guards to try to give him playing time. I think they want him to play more in the future. But where would you go if you were the Pelicans, number 13 in our draft?
Yeah, I think this is the right range for Kyra Lewis. You know, he would go in a similar spot. I think if I'm running the Pelicans, though, I maybe go in a slightly different direction, because when they made this pick, they didn't know how much Zion Williamson was going to be handling the ball.
That's right.
And that was a development over the course of this season. And I think given that and the way that Zion has played in his second year here, your number one focus has to be how do we get as much shooting as possible around Zion at all times? They're 23rd in three-point percentage at 35%. So pretty clearly that guy at this point in the draft then is Desmond Bane, who has come in and is hitting 44% of his threes. Yeah. Was
30th.
The very final pick of the first round on draft night. Someone who doesn't necessarily fill a huge need for them because they do have some guys on the wings with Josh Hart and Nickeil Alexander-Walker long-term. But, you know, he's got the ability, I think, to defend multiple positions because he's so strong for his size, even though he's only 6'5". And, you know, again, just a knockdown three-point shooter, which is what New Orleans needs.
44%, classic 3-and-D player in today's NBA. Yeah. A very good pick by Memphis, which has continually happened in the last few years. Memphis has, you know, hit one after the other, really solid picks, especially mid-lottery and later. Okay, so Schmidt's 14th pick, last pick of the lottery. It was the Celtics on draft night, a pick that they got from Memphis. That was unprotected. Was it unprotected or was it top? Anyway, for years, I thought this might be a really good pick. Ended up being the 14th pick. They took Aaron Nesmith, who has not played that much, although he just had one of his best games of the season. What would you do with number 14 at the Celtics?
Yeah, I'm tempted to go with Leandro Bolmaro, but I don't want to bore you guys with the 6'7 draft and stash Argentinian who's killing it for Barcelona. So I'm going to go with Jaden McDaniels out of University of Washington. This is a kid that we had projected as the number one pick for a brief amount of time before, you know, he had kind of a down freshman season at Washington alongside Isaiah Stewart. But I think he's had some really, really bright moments, you know, so far this season for Minnesota. When you look at a guy who's 6'10", who can defend multiple positions, I believe he's shooting over 35% from three so far. He can handle the ball a little bit. I remember just being blown away, you know, watching him in the pre-draft process, just how naturally talented he is. He has great shot blocking instincts for a wing as well. You know, we've seen him kind of sliding with point guards, guarding wings for stretches, and still has some areas to improve. I mean, physically, he's still very lean as well. But, you know, anytime you can get a guy with the ability to guard multiple positions and make it open three, especially alongside Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, I think you have to take a long, hard look at that guy. And McDaniels fits that profile.
His brother Jaylen McDaniels, who's a rookie. Is he a rookie or second year player for the Hornets?
Second year player.
He's gotten some playing time recently and has played well as well. Well, real quick, now that you hinted about Bolmaro, who I believe the Timberwolves have his rights and he plays for Barcelona, what do you know about? You're saying he should go higher in our redraft?
Yeah, 100%. I thought he was the second best international prospect behind Avdija.
He's a small forward.
He's small forward size almost, but he plays a lot as a point guard, honestly. I think he's a guy who can play kind of with or without the ball. You know, the question for him was always the shooting, and he's shooting like over 40% from three, you know, this year, playing a real role for Barcelona. Just had a career high in an ACB game the other day and plays with this like unbelievable energy. Like he'll pick you up 94 feet. He's flying all around the floor. He's a typical Argentinian style, like fighter, you know? And so, you know, whether they bring him over next year or in 2 years, I think he's going to be an impact guy and a potential NBA starter, honestly, for a long time.
Okay, well, so that's our lottery. So Obi Toppin slid totally out, Killian Hayes slid totally out, I think those are the only two that did their
Jaylen Smith.
Oh that's right, yeah. Pretty, you know, all in all, I think not a bad draft, especially when you look at some of the other guys we didn't mention. I think Cole Anthony has been good and looks like he's got a good future. You know, Poku in Oklahoma City, we'll see what he turns into. He's gotten a lot of playing time recently, so we'll see. But before we go, I wanted to get your guys' opinion real quick just on the top names in the upcoming draft. I don't want to steal any of your thunder when you come out with your mock drafts, but I think the big names are kind of well known, even to casuals at this point. But Schmitz, you know, what are you looking forward to in this draft process coming up? What should we know about these guys?
Yeah, I think you should know that there's a really strong top five. You know, I think teams kind of, you'll hear the phrase, the draft starts at six a ton, you know, because I think teams feel really good about this core top
five. And give us those five.
So Cade Cunningham. I think Cade Cunningham is the prize of the draft. I think he's the heavy favorite to go number one, you know, kind of 6'8", do a little bit of everything type of guy. I think you can put the ball in his hands. You know, not to say he's Luka Doncic, but like he can play kind of as a big guard in that sense. You know, Evan Mobley, I think, would be a number one pick in pretty much every draft. I think he would have been the number one pick in last year's draft. He's your prototypical modern big, you know, 7 feet tall, switchable, block shots, handles the ball, can shoot, pass, does a little bit of everything. You know, Suggs is kind of that tough-minded defender who's electric in the open court. You know, you'll hear comparisons everywhere from Jrue Holiday to Jason Kidd. You know, and he's an instant impact guy. I mean, he's going to start a lot of games. I think he's going to be an all-star in the future. And then, you know, the last two are the G League guys. Jalen Green, who I think some would argue has a number one type of talent. I think like
huge, big-time athlete.
I mean, smooth as hell, head at the rim type of guy. Think like kind of Zach LaVine, you know, with him, a guy who can really score it at all three levels. And then Jonathan Kuminga is kind of the X factor a little bit in this draft, just because, you know, teams probably haven't seen him quite as much as Suggs or Mobley or Cunningham or Green, at least prior to the bubble. But I mean, he's that prototype wing, 6'8", 7'1" wingspan, amazing body, kind of in that Jaylen Brown mold. So, you know, some scouts will say that this draft has five number one picks. I mean, it's seen as one of the better drafts we've seen in recent memory.
Pelton?
I think one of the reasons for that is usually you'll see some pretty big discrepancies between the guys that come out the best in the statistical projections that I do, and then, you know, the players who are at the top of our top 100, and, you know, that kind of gets synthesized into the final projections that I do. This year, I think there's a lot more overlap. There's three guys, you know, in this top five group are also in the top 10 in my stats only projections, the two G League players, and then Jalen Suggs as well. And that's the group that traditionally, if you're top 10 in both the stats only and then go top 10 in the draft or top 10 in our rankings, those guys are going to be locks. And Cade Cunningham wasn't quite as productive statistically at Oklahoma State, but, you know, certainly not bad in that regard. And then Mobley just gets penalized by the fact that he's a center. You know, that tends to drop players pretty substantially in my projections. But again, for a center, as Mike has said, I think, you know, as strong a prospect as you're going to come by. But I do think it's going to be interesting, because one question about drafting centers now is, because it's more difficult to pair those players than it is perimeter players. Like, if Golden State ends up with the number two pick in this year's draft after taking Wiseman last year, do they end up regretting taking Wiseman because they think Mobley is the stronger prospect, but they can't play those two guys together? I think that's an interesting question, and also maybe something
first,
you have to think
about.
The first
center in our draft we just did went 10th.
Yes. Not entirely coincidentally.
Yeah. How do your stat? I mean, you know, your stats database. I mean, now we have this new level of this new data point, which is the Ignite, the G League team playing against different type of competition. You know, we still don't exactly know how that's going to work out. I don't know how to project that.
Right. It's not a proof of concept yet, but the nice thing is that there are established, I've been doing translations of G League performance to the NBA for well over a decade here. So there's that nice track record to draw on. And you sort of get a useful comparison, because it's not like somebody from Gonzaga ever plays in the NBA that season, other than the one time the Kentucky center ended up playing for the Knicks like a week after he got knocked out of the NCAA tournament because he had been undrafted and gone back to college. But we get to see all these guys who were down in the G League bubble also playing in the NBA and compare how their stats translate. And that gives us a pretty good bedrock for what we can expect from Green and Kuminga, which is pretty solid. Green was, you know, one of the better players in the league as, you know, an 18-year-old.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. I enjoyed it as always. Thank you to Schmitz and Pelton. And Schmitz, you're getting revved up for another draft season, and Pelton never sleeps. So, thanks for listening to the Hoop Collective. We'll talk to you later this week. Thank you to Tony, our producer. Everybody have a good week.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.